Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 283, episode 1 of
Der Daily Zeitgeist,
a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Monday, April 17th, 2023.
Don't know what that is.
Me neither.
Don't ask. You know, who knows what day it is.
Don't even get me started. It's
Don't even
Monday,
get me started. It's Monday.
And that's plenty.
Thank
Am
you.
Am I right?
Yeah. Somebody got a case of the Monday.
My name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Somebody once told me it's all the coal gas study. You take the guns, there's less holes in heads. That's courtesy of Lockeroni. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
It's Miles Gray, a.k.a. What would you do if Zeit Baby at home crying all alone on the bedroom floor because he wants beats? And the only way to feed him is to bark like DMX with a little bit of mustard. Her Majesty's at work. Maybe sing some Pac now or some hits from Chi-Town. Gotta warm my voice now. Ooh. So for you, this is just a good time. But for me, it's the Daily Zeitgeist. Ooh. Okay, shout out Lockeroni on that one, too. Lockeroni did two. Got us with two. A twofer for the AKs. Shout
Hitting
out to
for
you,
the
Lockeroni.
Cycle, baby.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
All right. Well, Miles, Ooh. We are thrilled to be joined by a very funny comedian, actor, whose Netflix special, Veerdas Landing, is out now. He's got four of those, by the way.
We're trying to get
he's
one.
He's got them. He's wearing the four rings. He's
yeah.
got the four Netflix special rings, like Steph Curry. Right. Please welcome Veerdas!
What's up, guys? Wouldn't it be great if I had like a long Hindi song about me and like nobody understood
I would have loved it.
Also known as... and then just spent 5 minutes singing in Hindi.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I would have loved it.
I mean, it would have piqued my interest, just like in that one bit in Landing where you talked about how the difference between American sex and how you have sex. And you're like, I'm not going to translate that. And I was like, I wish I had the translation of what you were saying in that bit. But, you know, I'll leave that to my imagination.
Yeah. Well, I can give it to you. It's basically every time I'm done having sex, I'm like, may God bless you. Thank you. I hope you come back. And if you did anything wrong, please forgive me. That's it. That's basically it.
Okay, yeah, because the beginning was juxtaposing Americans are like, I'm about to clap those cheeks. You know, you just started speaking Hindi in a very...
About to clap those cheeks.
Yeah, it felt very deferential.
I've never clapped cheeks, by the way. I've never clapped anybody's cheeks. This is not in my skill set.
Just a golf, maybe a light golf clap of cheeks. Maybe is what I'm
I always feel like apologizing, but it's good to like hear just like a really deferential like thank you, thank God, thank everything
what
for what has just happened.
Yeah.
That is definitely more in line with my energy. I'm gonna go with that.
Isn't it nice to just lie naked next to a woman and be like, can we acknowledge that this is a blessing right now?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think that's a good sexual tone.
And it was good for you, right? Okay, good. That's a blessing too. That's everything's a blessing right now. Thank you so much.
No pressure. All right. We are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment, Veer. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things that we're talking about. We're going to talk about GOP donors being worried about that old abortion boomerang and their plan, which seems to be pray for a distraction, pray for something terrible to happen that they can run on, because this ain't it. We'll talk about the woke alerts, which is a new conservative strategy that we're seeing with this like Bud Light shit. But it's basically two sleeping giants, the mainstream media, into being right wing, being hateful. So
it's like an Amber Alert, like a child abduction notice that you get on your phone, except for like this company.
Woke alert.
They're into equality. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, I would not be surprised to see it work, because corporations, not the bravest entities in the world. You'll be surprised to learn. We're going to talk about this policy that I was not aware of that states that when a gun is seized by the police, like for instance, the gun that was used in Monday's mass shooting in Louisville, they have to get that right back out on the streets. There's like a law that says, got to get that out there. We can't hold on to this. It's a hot item. We gotta make sure that people have this gun back. So they're already, by the time you hear this, it will have already been sold at auction to a licensed dealer, with 20% going to the police department and the rest going to the Kentucky Office of Homeland Security.
Wow.
The Kentucky Office of, I don't know, that just did something to my imagination where I was like, yo, what is it like in the Kentucky Office of Homeland Security?
I think it's just be like suspicious of every brown person.
Every brown person
enters the state. Like, hey, what's this guy? Who's this guy? Who's this guy? What's going on? Kentucky Homeland Security.
Guys, I'm in Kentucky next week.
Are you? Louisville? No, good. I was going to say,
I don't want to be on their watch list.
So we're gonna talk about that plenty more. But first, Veer, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history?
Two things. I'm actively looking for just sort of jet lag remedies, because I've been in like 10 cities and 10 different time zones in the last 15 days. So I'm always like up to this thing on any new jet lag remedy. Mm. And the number one thing that I've found, and I can't believe that I haven't tried it in so long. Remember the movie Die Hard?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Where Bruce Willis is like,
fist if you rub your toes?
Yeah. So if you do that on the carpet, and now if you Google jet lag remedies, that's one of the top things that comes up. Right. So I've tried melatonin, I've tried hydration, I've tried hitting the gym. And I think for the first time in my life at age 43, I tried the fucking carpet thing and it works. It clears your head. It's clearly like some acupressure shit that's going on. But, you know, well done, Bruce Willis and this old ass movie.
Wait, so about how long is your bare toe gripping on carpet session to begin to feel the effects? Like how much work you have to put into this?
I did like 30 seconds or 45 seconds, but there's a, you know, when you're jet lagged, there's just like a mental haze around you. You're not really anywhere. You're not present, right? And it just kind of clears the haze up.
Wow. Mm.
And then you can decide if you like where you're at. If not, just go back into the haze.
I found it useful. Have you tried drinking caffeine until you hate yourself? Because that's
every day. That's any time zone. Okay. Yeah, that's
Until you think everybody's talking about you. That's something that I've. That's interesting. The fist with your toes has been something. I think I've tried it. Was that even what it was supposed to cure in Die Hard? Was it jet lag?
I think it was. It was like jet lag, and then you're supposed to kind of curl your toes and rub them against the carpet again and again. Which, you know, there's nothing like shitty hotel carpeting. You don't know if you're dirtying the carpet or the carpet's dirtying you when you do
100%.
That.
100%.
So. And, you know, the movie told us what our reaction was going to be, because Bruce Willis wasn't buying that shit. And then he does it. And then he goes, fucking A, fist with your toes.
Yeah. Also a movie, by the way, with the cheapest costume budget in the history of movies, I think. He had no shoes. Right. Yeah. He had one pair of pants and a fucking vest on, or like a wife beater. You call it a wife beater, which is your own issue.
Well, no, right. we're as a country, we're moving, or at least we're trying to move back. We're just calling those white under tank tops than the old WB. Yeah.
Which, by the way, sounds like you were trying to come up with a name as you were saying it. White under tank top. Yeah.
A ribbed tank top.
That's just four different words combined together. But yeah, great. But then they had to save money on budget to put it all into some of the great blood work, you know?
So
those squibs, shoot, like exploding in that guy's legs. That blew my mind. That was a movie I saw entirely too young and completely changed my personality. I saw that when I was 8.
And what you like, and you wanted to be
started
like John
smoking
McClane.
A cigarette and just being real cynical about everything.
Yeah. Shaved in a receding hairline a little bit. They look exactly like my boy John McClane.
Every girlfriend I got, I thought we were on the outs. I would complain about.
It's a movie that made you want to smoke. Ironically, I don't want to promote smoking, but it's one of those where you were like, I smoked for a long time, for 15 years.
Yeah,
and like I remember that movie, and there was another movie called Long Kiss Goodnight with Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah,
where just everybody smoked in every frame of the goddamn movie,
and Gina
and it
Davis.
Was impossible to watch it without smoking.
I just remember there's that one scene where like we're just gonna aim. And spray. And like when they got to get out of that hotel and like they fuck up, I'm just like, fuck it, run for your life. It's like one of my favorite lines in that movie. But yeah.
If you told me the entire noir film genre was like funded by the tobacco industry, like I'd be on board. That nothing looks more beautiful than cigarette smoking in noir films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember even like in Broken Arrow, John Travolta's character smokes a cigarette in a really unique way. And that even like, he'd put it in his mouth and he'd do like, and like really wrap his fingers around it. I was like, oh man, I'm smoking my grandma's cigarette butts when I get home. Like, to try just it like out.
The hand closing like Scientology around an innocent person. Yeah. Right? Just kind of slowly tightening their grip until reality's gone.
With every subsequent e-reading they do.
Yeah.
The French inhale that. I think is it Delroy Lindo who does the French inhale in Dead Presidents? Was that like that? Now that you're mentioning it, it's like smoking in movies is like some of the most influential shit of my childhood. Is just seeing that and being like, that's how I'm going to smoke. Ooh, no, that's how I'm going to smoke when I go.
Right, right. Exactly.
So it's probably good that we don't do it anymore, but what a glorious time.
Yeah.
What is something that you think is overrated?
Ice baths. I'm just going to say it. Wow. All right, like, because I'm in Austin right now. Every comedian doesn't need to do jujitsu and ice baths. It's not like just write jokes. That's all you need to do. All right. Also, I don't know about you, but like, I like my dick, and I like the size, and I have no interest in destroying it.
If you like your dick, you would shock it with temperature.
Right, there you go.
Gotta be mean to it.
Having said that, we have 1.4 billion people. So a couple of shocked Indian dicks is not such a bad idea. Right? I'm just saying, like, shutting down a few of them. But, like, I tried my first ice bath last week and I was just like, no, I'm never doing this again.
Did you get roped into it by some, like, jujitsu-brained person who's like, you got to try this, man?
I did my first jujitsu thing as well. So I'm learning to box for a movie. And the trainer was like, I also do jujitsu. Do you want to have a class? And I was like, fine. And then, like, he lay down on top of me and, like, put me in, like, a hold. And he was like, now you have to get out. And it was like, literally 20 seconds before I just went, I can't. Let me go. Like, it was fucking terrible. It was pathetic. And then he was like, okay, now you lie down on top of me and hold me down. And we'll do that. That's and hot. He just flung me off like I was a fucking handkerchief, right?
Right.
And then we did a bunch of rolls and I got nauseous. And I'm like, if the idea of this art form is to get your opponent scared that you're going to throw up on them, then I'm succeeding at jujitsu. But otherwise, no.
It's not funny. You're just like, it's going to happen. They're like, okay, you win. I tap.
I feel like there's probably an evolutionary, like, part of the reason we survived as long as we did, and like have this instinct to throw up when we're in danger. We being me, at least, throw up, shit myself, you know,
to gross freeze. Out your attacker.
Yeah, yeah. I probably to gross out the attacker. It has to be, right? It's got to be there for a reason.
Or is that like your version of like when an octopus like deploys the ink, like in a yeah, like terrifying? Exactly. You're just like,
I throw up so much that they can't see. They can't see me anymore.
Here's the question about the real world application of jujitsu as well. Like what I always see is like some guy's in a hold and he's about to choke to death or his arm is about to break. And that's when he taps and he lets the guy go. And yeah. Now let's say you're on the street. Somebody shows up and tries to mug you and you're a badass jujitsu person. And you put the mugger in a hold.
Yeah.
The mugger is not tapping. You know right. what I mean?
So you just right? have to put him to sleep.
But what if you can't put him to sleep? At some point, you've just got a mugger with a broken hand who's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know?
They just get so bored that they walk away.
They're like, yeah, dude, but, just puke on me, okay? Let's call it a day.
It's not like an attack and exit art form. You're humping someone into submission. Yeah. That's basically what jujitsu is.
Yeah. It's good for fights that start while your opponent is asleep. To get them to sneak up on him.
Just spoon him in bed and like, got you, rear naked choke, tap, or you'll go back to sleep. Yeah, I mean, I think the only time, like if you can actually subdue someone with like a choke hold is probably the only thing that, look, a jits mob online, come for me. Somebody who used to regularly use my homebrew jujitsu in high school on kids because I was still in my aggro phase as a teenager.
Yeah. Do you want to tell that story, Miles? I think it's, I mean, I know our listeners have heard it, but I feel like...
It's fine. I don't need to debase myself in front of a very accomplished comedian right now about how I choked someone out because they said they walked out of anger management in 2003. Yeah. Yeah, we'll move past that. I've moved past that.
You do have to, if you're choking someone out, putting them to sleep, you do have to say shh, in their ear. That's the cool thing to do.
I do find, though, that like... If you believe the internet, America's become a little like fighty. You know, there's a lot of guys who are like fucking at the supermarket or like in a parking lot or just like on an airline, like looking for a fight and now know some sort of a martial art. So I always feel a little bit like intimidated.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like that group of like, you know, men who are trying to find some kind of meaning in like this very heteronormative sense, and like the easiest way is to be like, I'm gonna learn how to fucking kill people, you know what I mean? Like, and rather than communicate things, so that group is out there, but I think it's just the general, you know, degradation of society that's leading to people being a little more fighty than normal,
because it's not like a big part of the population that makes me wish that martial arts had stayed unmixed. Personally, I remember a time when we didn't mix those bitches up, but it seems like there's always a chance that whoever you're mad at has been training in an MMA gym.
I mean, I remember being surprised too, like when I was like in college and I went to the UK, and I'm like, people love to scrap in the UK, but like in a different way. Like Americans will get like, it can get kind of fucking grim, whereas I'll see like fair one-on-one fights. People are like, all right, lads, all right, now you've had enough. Now go off to the chippy because the pub just let out or whatever. But yeah, in America, it's definitely, you see, it's getting a little more intense for sure.
No, I mean, you get into a fight in the UK and they will like colonize your country for 250 years. Like those guys don't fuck around, man. You know, not take your resources, all of that shit. Like you
Some old white ladies on your money suddenly. You're like, what the fuck is this?
Isn't the drunken like soccer fan brawler discipline of martial arts? Isn't that what like Conor McGregor was good? Like, wasn't that basically his discipline that he trained in? He just was a good fist fighter.
Conor McGregor also sounds like an Irish person who's doing a non-Irish person's Irish accent. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, right.
It's like, yo, that would be offensive if it wasn't real.
Right.
What is something you think is underrated?
Naps. So I found like an app called Pizziz. It's P-Z-I-Z-Z. Uh-huh. I don't know the owner. It's just something I found randomly online. And it's like an app that talks you down into a nap. And wakes you up.
Wait.
And you can choose. Yeah. So you can choose a nap anywhere between 10 minutes and like 90 minutes for power napping. Uh-huh. Right. And then they have different voices. And this voice just kind of goes, and now go to sleep. And and keeps you, you know, keeps you under. And then while you're under, says cool shit. He's like, life's good. Things will be all right. Shit works out, etc., etc. And then wakes you up from your nap as well. And so, like, if I have a gig or something, like a 10-minute power nap feels as good as, like, you know, 5 hours of sleep.
Wow. So
napping.
Wait, so what is what is like the dialogue for the wake up section? Is it like gentle or it's like, hey,
it's,
yeah. You got a show,
fire. No, and now I want you to gently start moving your toes and come back and remember everything we talked about and life's good. And there's like a male voice and a female voice as well. And you can choose like the voice to music ratio. That's kind of cool.
It's also good marketing because the name is perfect for catching people who are trying to order pizza and are just incredibly drunk.
Yeah, because the Z and the A are real close. I'm going to get some pizzas.
Dude, our favorite thing to do back when there were no cell phones, when we hated someone in college, I went to college in like Galesburg, Illinois, was just to order a pizza from every pizza joint in town to the guy we hated. Yeah. And just have like 10 pizza guys show up at his fucking dorm room with 10 pizzas. Like that was always
great
fun.
American pastime.
Yes.
One of the best.
Now with the apps, you can barely do that anymore.
Yeah.
Things we've lost. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get into some news.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And so there's some reporting going around about like Ron DeSantis's big donors are starting to worry. They're starting to like kind of check their watch and stir about anxiously because it feels like the polling wasn't good when it came out and it's getting worse because he's just like not doing anything. He's doing what I do in a fist fight, which is play dead. it seems like. He's just sitting there and talking about, so trying to change the subject. Have you ever tried to, when someone's fighting you, try to change the subject?
Well, fuck you up, man. Hey, what do you think the chances are of Arsenal winning a Premier League title this year? It's been a few years. What? Shut up.
By the way, you know what's going to happen with this American news, right? I'm going to ask basic ass questions as an Indian person.
Please.
And you will feel like I feel when I meet Americans and they ask me questions about India. That's what's going to happen right
now. And I think that's really, I think that's why you're a perfect guest, because, you know, so much of your material is about looking at the sort of the absurdities of your society, your culture. And we can't pick a more absurd one than the United States right now in the year 2023.
Well, but I feel like you guys are hard on yourselves. Everybody's going through something or the other. But okay, so to make it basic, Ron DeSantis is the guy who's going to maybe take Donald Trump's place?
Potentially would be it would be the presidential candidate who could run against Joe Biden in 2024, assuming Joe Biden is also the candidate for the Democratic Party.
And still alive.
And knows that it's 2024.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Oh, he doesn't know it's 2023. So that we're beyond that as a requirement. That man thinks it's 1967 and he's cruising in his vet.
Yeah, exactly.
And this man is as charismatic as Trump?
No.
He's not. So he is, we've been talking about this for a while, because he's been like the great hope of the mainstream media and the people who were, you know, who wanted Jeb Bush to win before Trump. Like, you know, they were the people who discounted Trump, who were Republicans. Like, this is their hope. They're like, all right, enough with the Trump silliness. We have this other great candidate. We're going to move on. And it's just like 2016 all over again, or 2015, I guess, the Republican primaries, where it's just like, oh, wait, nobody wants to vote for this motherfucker.
Right. Yeah.
Well, then that's the test that Republicans have, right? Because if you're a Republican now, you're really being asked the question, your vote, is it based on actual ideology or just on fandom?
Right.
You know, because maybe you voted for Trump for fandom, but now if Ron DeSantis comes in, like, that's the actual test of how much you believe in your ideology. So
yeah. Unfortunately, like, it's gone. It's basically like Marvel, like it's the MCU now. It's all about fandoms. There's nothing about policy. It's like, oh, this guy's kind of like Thanos almost.
Right.
But like, and he's going to own the libs with how powerful and, like, you know, how regressive he is. But yeah, like with Ron DeSantis, he's really trying to differentiate himself by trying to run to the right of Donald Trump, which is what worries some of these donors, because Ron DeSantis has been very enthusiastic about how he's just going to just completely kneecap abortion. In Florida, the state legislature, they just passed a bill that would ban abortion after six weeks, when most people don't even know they're pregnant. And DeSantis is like, I'm signing that shit. Okay, watch this, because I'm actually about overturning Roe v. Wade. Okay. And again, he's trying to court this very hyper conservative audience going into the primary. But a lot of people who are just onlookers are just sort of saying, this, like, abortion thing with conservatives, it is one of the most consistently losing messages in recent memory. Like, it's been loss after loss with these candidates who, like, evoke, they're like, I'm anti-choice. And most people who, you know, value body autonomy are like, yeah, no, that, I'm going to move on from that.
Which is most people. Like, most people do value body autonomy, and that's why it's such a political loser.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't even think it's, you know, sometimes when I see regressive policies just sort of worldwide, you know, something I tell myself is everybody who's upset at you is going to be dead in 10 years, right? Whenever I'm in trouble, right?
Right.
I feel like, you know, like on your last day of work, that's when you take a shit in your boss's office and walk out, right?
Yeah, of course.
I feel for this generation of politicians and leaders, they've just figured out this is their last day at work.
Yeah.
And they're taking a shit.
Yeah.
You know, in the boss's
all
office.
All of our offices. Except they are the boss, and they're taking a shit in each of our cubicles as they go out.
But they're not going to be around to smell it.
Right.
That's
precisely
the important part.
And, like, meanwhile, too, this is kind of like Republicans across the country are really doubling down on the abortion issue with, like, the worst possible takes. Like, last week we brought up Tim Scott, who's running for president. He evoked, like, he's been evoking replacement theory as a reason to end abortion, which is something we've also seen in Nebraska. We also got another really healthy helping of the racist anti-Semitic trope from state senator Steve Erdman, who looks like the kind of guy that has never spoken to a woman outside of giving a directive. But I just want to say, like, we'll just play his fear mongering around. This is the problem when we give people body autonomy.
Oh, yeah.
We have killed 2,000 babies since abortion became legal.
Just so you know, he means 200,000. He meant to edit that, he's going to keep saying 2,000 because he doesn't even have this monologue memorized, okay?
Right.
Those are 2,000 people in the state of Nebraska that could be working and filling some of those positions that we have vacancies. They're not here.
Mm. Instead, who's there?
Our state population has not grown except by those foreigners who have moved here or refugees who have been placed here. Why is that? It's because we've killed 200,000 people. These are people we've killed.
So there's that. That's phase one of that take. Of he's like, yeah. So you know, I hate to say it, but it's these brown people that are moving in that are replacing the little white babies that I'm talking about in Nebraska. But again, he's relying on this very racist trope that we've seen from Charlottesville and many other places when you hear like, but they will not replace us type of shit.
Is that what you think the abortion thing is driven by? Is that we need to have enough of a white population going out there? Is that what you think it is?
I think it's one of the things they're trying. I think, you know, like that's one of the arguments they're testing out. I think a lot of it is about wanting to control women and not like having a patriarchal society that is like down to bodily autonomy.
But it is something that like very wealthy industrialists like talk about in private, about this idea of like, are there enough babies and like, are there enough white babies? And what does that mean to the racial makeup of the country? So,
is there enough revenue for this big industry that is babies and children as well, right?
Yeah. Right. Do we have enough customers in general?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something too that, again, what by invoking the replacement theory, you perk the ears up of like ethno-nationalists, white supremacists, and also evangelicals who are like, oh yeah, good, abortion, and yes, more white people. I like that too, because I fear a brown America. And so, yeah, that's one take. His colleague, John Lowe, decided he was going to use, for his rhetorical attack, he was going to read from a spooky book of ghost stories to really bring the point home about how abortion is just so very bad. Here's him again. Be careful. There's a very spooky ghost story he's about to tell.
With a brand new baby in her womb. Marrying her new baby in her womb, she approaches Elizabeth, and John is in Elizabeth's womb. And the Holy Spirit is communicated in some miraculous, incredible way from the womb of the Virgin Mary in Jesus Christ himself to the womb of Elizabeth, John the Baptist, and John leapt.
Oh.
And that is why abortion is clearly evil.
Boom.
Laugh track. They're laughing.
Yo.
And that is why abortion is clearly evil.
Second punchline. Okay, he repeated.
Yeah, he needed another bite of that punchline. Yeah.
So he said that is... Wow. Like,
I mean,
you can see somebody behind him. The camera, it's worth looking at because there's somebody behind him. Like, I don't know if they're from the media, but they just like when they realize what he's doing, they just like
they put
cover
their phone
their
out
face.
He's like, wait. He's like, wait, hold on. What? He's like texting his wife. He's like, you're not going to believe what this fucking guy just said.
Yeah.
I would have paid somebody $5,000 to just scream, Jesus is brown, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you sure about that? Are you sure you want to? Are you sure about that's the
what do you
story
think
you want
like?
To tell?
No, seriously. And again, I mean, but hey, you hear that, libs? Two ladies touched bellies and the one lady's ghost baby made the other baby move. So checkmate, assholes. Abortion is evil. Like, huh? It's really
thing about your ideological battle in America that I find hilarious as a liberal myself.
Sure,
right? And somebody who's quite left. Why would you have so much loathing for people who already have so much self-loathing? Like this, nobody hates on themselves more than the average liberal. You know, we're just like a part of anxiety and self-loathing. Like, we're hating ourselves enough for all of you. You don't need to do it.
No, truly. It's I mean, again, this is like this is your brain on anti-choice rhetoric, folks. You know, the people, yeah. You know, the like left to make a compelling case in some of these state houses have the charisma of an evil high school principal from an 80s movie. And I think while most people are thinking, why the fuck are they doing this when it's clear they've been losing election after election and like ones where they thought they were going to change this like state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, like over this issue. Like, we have to realize that people are getting right now in primary mode and they just want to make their case to the base first, even if it alienates, I don't know, 70% of the country when they hear it. And the overall strategy, especially in Ron DeSantis's case, as this one political science professor, Jack Pitney, puts it, is he is betting on disaster. That is really what's going on, too. Like, the reason they're still stoking this fire is because they are hoping for some kind of terrible recession or foreign policy blunder, disaster to help swing the focus off of the, you know, regression or the restricting of body autonomy or, you know, our own reproductive rights.
Yeah.
Well, do you also feel like maybe, you know, you need some fire to stoke, right? At the end of the day, mm-hmm. in a politically charged year, and maybe the problem or the development of America, as you look at it, is that you're not able to stoke a religious fire. For whatever right. reason, because you've kind of moved beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. And in many countries in the world, that's the basis of an election, is right. basic religious polarization, this religion right. against that religion.
Right.
And you don't get to do that anymore. So really all you have is abortion and guns, which kind of feel similar to religions
right.
in yeah. modern America, mm, you know?
Yeah. That's a fantastic point. And yeah, I mean, the way that we do like look at it quite literally, probably worship gun culture and things like that. It mm-hmm. is the way and the way it's invoked, too. You know, like people even say that, you know, Jesus even is sanctioning weapons. I don't know if yeah. you know this in a very charitable interpretation for their own means. But again, like even when they think of like, let's hope there's COVID-23 or something that is going to completely change the conversation. I mean, you know, abortion is a fundamental right. And so one that probably becomes even more important if there's economic uncertainty, like even if they're praying for a recession, I think people would even be more concerned with, oh, with my financial outlook being a certain way, it's probably even more important to me to be able to decide when I'm having a family. Or I don't think people are like, or the idea that, you know, if they have this take of like Joe Biden is going to make America look weak to our enemies, I don't think suddenly your concerns about body autonomy go out the window. So right. it's just this weird issue that they keep holding on to. But it makes more sense if you consider that's like, I think they're just hoping another issue comes up because they'd rather make an election be like, look at how bad Joe Biden messed up the economy than them having to defend. Here's why we believe you shouldn't have any reproductive rights.
Yeah. I mean, I do get nervous every time the Republicans are banking on a disaster because yeah. they have a way of like, you know, the story of Nixon and Kissinger prolonging the Vietnam War, like yeah. Nixon was running for president against Johnson's vice president. Johnson was about to like have a peace treaty and they actively like went to Vietnam and sabotaged the peace treaty. More like it's actually not going to be a good deal. We'll get you a better deal and we're going to win. Like, is one of the most profound acts of evil that I feel like probably got a little memory hole because it didn't come out until like decades after. I think it was like the sort of shit that like people at the time were like, Nixon's so evil. Who probably did that? But like, he did
right.
do
no,
that.
Like, he
shit.
Did that shit. Right.
But like, they will sabotage, they will cause the death of tens of thousands of Americans in order to get power. So anytime the Republicans are like betting on disaster, I'm always a little bit worried, especially when it ties to the economy, which is a complex system driven by Republicans, a bunch of rich people who are Republicans that like,
right. And they could be the architects of a default too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Course.
Through the obstruction.
I think also if you consider that, especially elections, like I have a friend who's a politician. And he says, you know, the big mistake that people make is you think that people take a long time to make a decision about who they vote for. Right. But if you're a politician, you understand that you have 20 seconds of a person's time. It's a 20-second right. decision. Mm-hmm. And that any sort of big election issue that really warrants introspection is a complex, nuanced issue. right? So what did Biden do to the economy, et cetera, et cetera? You got to go into that. But the reason they keep repeating the greatest hits, because the greatest hits represent the minimum amount of words. It's literally grammar in election right. communication. Low taxes, pro-guns, pro-choice. You know, they're just very easy to drive decisions. And so it's kind of disheartening to think about these gigantic issues just being boiled down to economy of words for communication, for reaching people. But economy of words gives you your farthest reach.
Right.
So it's actually a lot more simple than we think it is.
Right. In most cases. Like, the term like thought killing cliche is also the other thing that's used. It's like, no, just once you hear that, it'll end any kind of further thought once you hear a certain talking.
Less immigrants, more guns, lower taxes. Mm-hmm. You just understand shit. And so you have to keep the greatest hits in their current form. So you have to keep talking about abortion, save babies.
And it's like so funny too, because like, even after the last election, Republicans are like, we lost. We got to do something about getting more suburban women. And then we got it. We got it. Spooky ghost stories about how baby Jesus got John the Baptist to kick his mommy's tummy.
Gave him a force ghost high five through his mother's belly and they did a flip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why you shouldn't be able to have any decision making ability over your own body. Okay. Yeah. Vote for us.
Well, we have a new segment on this show. It's called Woke Alerts, because this No, it's just some political action committee. Consumers Research is providing woke alerts to notify you when your favorite company goes too woke. I mean, I feel like we're seeing it with like the Bud Light thing.
I like that they sent a woke alert out for BlackRock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Woke Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. They always talk about woke Wall Street. But I mean, this seems like, to be honest, it's easy to make fun of. It seems like a winning strategy to me, because corporations are like very skittish, and you can control what a corporation thinks is happening with a mailing campaign, or, you know, getting 20 people to just send a bunch of angry emails to a corporate, you know, like they don't have morals. All they have is they're doing their best to see what they think is making people happy, and everyone is afraid of being fired.
And line go up. If line go up, then we're good. Make sure the line goes up, though, please.
It's Consumers Research is basically a lobbying firm under the guise of a consumer watchdog. It's funded by dark money. They recently made the news for their effort to prevent Wall Street from factoring climate change into investment decisions. And they're just like launching a huge campaign to anything environmental, social progress. They're going to be there to claim that it is woke. But like, some of the stuff seems like confusing. Like it seems like they freaked out when the American Airlines like reduced legroom on flights, which.
Wait, that's woke?
I guess that's woke. They're claiming
to extract.
They even define what woke is?
No.
And
can anyone define what woke is anymore?
No, nobody can. There's an author who just published a book about like how woke brain disease is killing our children, and went on a TV show and they were like, so just define woke for us, because this is confusing to talk about this without having a clear definition. And she had no clue. She was just like,
You just wrote a book about it. Hold on. Actually, let me find that clip, because it's pretty fantastic. Oh, here we go.
Would you mind defining woke? Because it's come up a couple times, and I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
So, I mean, woke is sort of the idea that this is going to be one of those moments that goes viral. I mean,
yeah, you're right.
Woke is something that's very hard to define, and we've spent an entire chapter defining it.
Uh-huh.
It is sort of the understanding that we need to totally reimagine and redo society in order to create hierarchies of oppression. It's hard to explain in a 15-second soundbite.
Okay. I get it. It's just, again, a thought-killing cliche.
The whole ass
for them, too. Oh, woke? Bad. That's bad. American Airlines is woke?
Bad. Yeah, that would have been a better answer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, woke is bad.
Is it really an election stance, like anti-woke? Because I remember seeing a couple of candidates that you guys had who were like, I'm going to get rid of the woke, etc. And
yeah,
like, okay, I went to college in Galesburg, Illinois. Uh-huh. Right? And so this is America, America, right? It's New York, America. It's not. And every bit of American pop culture I've ever seen tends to shit on the Galesburg, Illinois in the middle of the country. As if they're ignorant but these are just very hardworking, very decent people who want to pay their bills and watch The Bachelor and go to bed at night, right? And I think even if they were Republican and you went up to them and you're like, I'm anti-woke, they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. You know,
get the fuck off my farm or get the fuck out of my cafeteria, you know? So is it really a thing?
I think what it's done, from my perspective, they have perfectly encapsulated the feeling of like white hegemony or like cishet hegemony and the creeping influence of people that want more inclusive language, that want a more inclusive society. And so those things, because to them, they're saying, oh, I got to feel bad because now I got to use people's pronouns. People have preferred pronouns. That's woke. Oh, I have to now. I can't. We're supposed to teach a good faith interpretation of American history to kids so they understand this. That's woke. So anything that upsets that balance or suddenly puts these people in a position where they're like, oh, I got to feel bad about this, or I have to change the way I've been interacting with other people. That's how they just sort of deploy that word as a sort of the discomfort around any kind of progress that's occurring. And I guess
it's not even what you define as progress. It's rewiring. Anything that requires rewiring
can be
easily determined as being allegedly woke.
Less leg room on an American Airlines flight. That's rewiring my posture. But I think, Veer, you're making a really good point that they, by being the ones who focus on woke, they are the ones who keep bringing this shit up over and over again. And we saw it in the last midterm elections that, like, people... You know, they're the ones who are talking about, you know, trans people and like top surgery and, you know, all these different things that people who live in Illinois, like where you went to college, might not care that much about. But they are like, that becomes their talking point, and like they own it. And they're the ones who are like talking about it. And I feel like it's also a losing political strategy, but it's one that gets a lot of attention. And so they're able to kind of profit off of it.
Yeah. I think it tracks because you have such a large liberal media that picks it up as well, right? On both sides,
yes.
It tracks.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, okay, I had host parents, and my host parents, one of them was a cafeteria lady and one of them was a trucker, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, to them, the fact that I was an Indian thespian was as alien as the fact that, you know, that somebody was woke, et cetera, et cetera. But I venture to say, if you went up to either of those people and you were like, oh my God, you got to use people's pronouns now, you know, et cetera, they'd be like, I'll call you a bottle of applesauce if you want me to call you that shit, if my taxes go down, you know, or if my life is made easier. And to take sort of their narrative and make it about these things is almost to disregard their real narrative.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I mean, on this level, the GOP especially has completely abandoned any kind of policy. There's nothing, everything they evoke has nothing to do with substantive policy. It's about these culture war grievances, because they feel that, I think they saw that that's energizing people more so in like a rallies type situation where people are coming out and they've seen these school board meetings go up with a lot of people like, I don't want my kids knowing about like slavery in this country or whatever. And I think they're very short-sightedly being like, okay, that bottle that. While in the meantime, to your point, the very real situation of living in the United States is also a force that acts on everyone, and everybody is having to face inflation or unaffordable housing or wage stagnation and limited options for medical care. But because all of their things aren't really going to the heart of correcting those things, it's much easier to just go straight to, oh my God, remember when you used to be able to just say, like, just use slurs against gay people in public and it wasn't, you didn't get canceled. And like that to them, it feels like, okay, that's a better place to just operate from, because we're not going to have a substantive policy debate right now, because we've completely just normalized this sort of like culture war grievance thing as being the way we talk about politics.
Yeah. Both sides are focused on distracting people from the core thing that they actually care about, which is like their material well-being. And, you know, both sides would rather not have corporations' economic health matter more than their physical health. But that is the world that both sides actually want to keep in place. And so they generate a bunch of noise to distract people, hopefully. That is their goal.
Well, I also think that it's a very interesting time for your country. And I say this respectfully, but, you know, I think America's getting used to the fact that what used to be one seat at the table is now many seats at the table. You know, at least the global table. It's a different world we live in right now. Everybody's voice is equally amplified. But, like, I remember going to college in America in 1999, right? And in 2000, 2001. So just before 9/11. I feel like it didn't really matter who the president was at that moment in time in America, or at least it mattered less because you were so far ahead of the global pack, you know? And there wasn't this big culture conversation and everybody's voices weren't amplified. Your system had been so set that it really mattered very little who the president was. And whether you were Republican or Democrat, you were going to be okay, no matter who the president was. And I feel like that somehow changed now, where now it really matters ideologically who the president is.
Yeah, I think part of that, too, is just we've gone from, I think there's a gradual increase in people actually trying to understand civics in this country.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot for the longest time, it didn't matter in like the boom years of the 90s for many people. But there are plenty of communities that began to stagnate. And those were sort of like niche things that you would have to be really tapped into, like American culture, to really care about. And now is like, I think the degradation of like our infrastructure and all these things are becoming more widespread and felt. People are beginning to understand more. It's like, oh, wait, what are these policies again? Oh, right. Before it used to be like, yeah, you care about babies, but abortion was never under threat. But then now it is. And suddenly it's like, well, hold on now. Like that actually fucking matters to me. And so I think it's part and parcel of just how difficult life is becoming for people, and also having to inform yourself of like, you can't just be passive. But what goes alongside of that is you have all these media apparatuses that are just there to get your attention and maybe say like, yeah, I know it could be about this, but let's talk about this other issue rather than, you know, do we live in a corporatocracy that are run by a bunch of plutocrats? And is that something we need to be concerned about? It's easier to say the Republicans won't do anything about guns. Right. And, you know, the Republicans just go, the Democrats are woke. When I think all people would rather say, I would like to make more money at my job. I would like to afford a house. I don't want to go into crippling debt because I want an education.
Yeah.
Like take those points and make those real for me. Everything else is just to avoid the real reconciliation or the real reckoning that has to occur in this country, because that's, I think, one of our greatest strengths as a culture is our ability to avoid a reckoning with a lot of the shit that's been going on and just kind of paper over the cracks until, I don't know, it becomes completely untenable.
Yeah.
Guys, I really think your election comes down to like a 20-minute debate. Like, and it's very entertaining, but it really is.
It will.
That's the American election. It's that 20-minute debate. I think you win and lose in that debate. It's really like watching gladiators. It really is watching an American election.
And that's the difference between potentially another global like military conflict is because one old white guy made fun of the other old white guy on a stage, and people were like, "Yep, all right, that's it."
He owned him.
He owned him. Oh, he's been pwned. Wait, what? I'm being conscripted?
And who knows if there's even anybody still making up their mind at this point? Who's still making up their mind about Donald Trump and Joe Biden? Like, what is it even 20 minutes? Like, what would it take for anybody to be like, wait, Donald Trump is running for president again? Is this guy?
All right, let me see where he's at on the issues, and then I'll get back to you.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where First-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And I do just want to talk about, Enver, get your kind of perspective on guns, because we talk a lot about it. The fact that the presence of guns, the fact that gun sales shot through the roof, that pun was unintended, but there are probably plenty of guns inadvertently shooting through the roof because there are so many new gun owners in the United States now, because the gun industry is very successful at turning the anxiety that we were just talking about into sales. And so there's a news story that came out at the end of last week that after the mass shooting that happened on Monday in Kentucky, the actual gun used in that mass shooting was sold at auction to a licensed dealer. And this is that's the system in many U.S. states. Like, many U.S. states have a law that says the police can't keep guns. Like, once they confiscate a gun, they have to get it back on the street. Washington State, where police are allowed to decide whether or not to sell guns, have sold dozens of AR-15s, AK-47s, and other assault weapons. And, like, so some of these weapons are then, like, used to shoot police. Like, so this is actually the rare conservative policy, like, gun policy, where the police are actually like, we would prefer that this wasn't the case because these guns keep shooting our officers after we put them back out there. But the gun lobby and everything makes it so that, like, you just can't.
Well, they made it in Kentucky. It's just a law that you can't destroy it. You know what I mean? Like, that's it's just because it's the law that you can't destroy it. Because, like, you can't do that. Don't destroy the gun. You got to sell it.
It's like burning a Bible, you know? Like, it is a religious thing. You can't destroy a gun. That's the most sacred thing in the United States.
Veer, check the drawer of the nightstand in your hotel room. Is there a gun in there?
Oh, there's one.
Like, there's one placed there by the Gideons. Yeah.
Well, I think, and again, speaking from an outsider's perspective.
Yeah, of course.
And speaking from a largely very nonviolent country historically. Even our independence movement was nonviolent. So I think it's pure economics. I think that, you know, weapons of mass destruction always come with, like, contracts of mass production. and people forget that. You know?
Yeah.
And I think the greatest con narratively that has ever been pulled by the gun industry is that to preserve guns is somehow a preservation of American voice or a preservation of American culture or a preservation of American values. And that's actually not the case, because if a preservation of guns is a preservation of American values, then from the same timing, a preservation of segregation is also a preservation of American values and a preservation of other things. So if you're not preserving those things, you don't have to preserve guns either. If you can evolve from segregation, you can evolve from guns. But this narrative that they've put in, which is to preserve guns is to preserve America, is just gigantically reinforced. And I don't think it changes unless the average American doesn't feel like a gun makes them American. That's what needs to change.
Yeah, it's like, because on one side you have people that are so just scared around them. Like, they're like, I just need a gun because I don't know what could happen. What could happen in my neighborhood? And then you do have those people like, it's my right to own this anti-aircraft gun because of the Second Amendment, which is part of our Constitution. I know some libs will call it a spooky post-it note signed by racists from 250 or whatever years ago, but that's our right. And yeah, to your point, it's like, it's the Constitution is one of the biggest things that people will evoke in terms of like the rhetoric of it is like, because that's our document and we can't just tear that up, even though we've had to amend it a few times.
Right.
And yeah, it's become a very intoxicating argument, and to the point where like we're only seeing the absurdity of it become more and more in our face now when you have governors say like, my friend was shot in that mass shooting, and then say nothing about gun control after. And then, well,
that's hands in pockets, right? At the end of the day. But I do think from a complete outsider's perspective, it's not the gun that makes you American. It's what happens after the gun that makes you American. That's why people come to your country, right? The fact that you can dial 911 and a cop will be there in 30 seconds, and that you will drive to the hospital on a road that is perfectly paved and perfectly lit at night, and walk into a hospital with state-of-the-art technology and be able to be treated. That's the appeal. You know what I mean? It's not the gun.
That's the promise. You know,
that's the promise. Right? Nobody's coming across for the ownership of the gun. People are coming across that, oh, fuck, in case I ever run into a gun, America will take care of me. That's why people come to you, if they come to you. You know, so I'd love to see the reinforcement of that narrative, and I just don't see it.
Well, again, because if you think about it, right, to the point of like mass production, it's easier to be like, well, that keeps an industry going. If we're suddenly like, folks, people come to us because of we have this robust infrastructure or these other things, that would also begin a lot of conversation of how we've not reinvested in our own country. Like we're like cruising off of like, you know, post-World War II investment for like many decades now, especially when you look at like public schools and things like that, where you'd hope to be like, man, like we need to reinvest in a lot of these things. But because some of those would probably create a need for like more like, you know, tax revenue and things like that, just becomes a hot button issue, because then we have to start talking about like our progressive tax systems, and it's easier just be talking about the thing that will make people money, unfortunately. And yeah, like it really is something that I think a lot of Americans have lost sight of, is sort of people always say like, this is the best fucking country, but they're looking at it from their version of like, I got Wi-Fi and 4K TV. This is the best country in like the world, versus to your point, how a lot of other, like the situation in other places, why other people may believe that this is a nicer place to live. Although, you know, it is an intoxicating advertisement we have, and one that people end up realizing is a little bit different when they arrive. But overall, you know, you do see, like, you understand why there's a little bit more stability here than other places, although it's, you know, rooted in some darker things at times.
Well, I don't know why guns enter your school system. I have two friends who are American and have an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old, and they happen to go to college, to school in India, you know, and so all I can speak from is from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Our school system is so hard that our collegiate system set us free. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's almost like we were brought up to say we have to work so hard in school so we can feel all the things we want to feel in college. And I'm not saying that's a great system, but I'm saying how can you realter your school system so it keeps kids busier and it keeps their minds more occupied so they don't turn on each other with these narratives? I think that's also a conversation to be had, you know, about your school system.
Culturally in India, is education seen as a thing that is like could be a runaway train, like ideologically? Because that's sort of the like attitude. There's a lot of hostility towards public education in the United States, where you see people like, I don't want my kid to learn that. I don't want my kid to know Rosa Parks was black, and like these other things, where you're seeing too that there's just, it's like we're incentivizing like the breakdown of public education too. And I think that's another thing that like we're having to fight against, where, you know, teachers are already like, they're fleeing the industry because there's a lack of support, a lack of proper pay. And we're making it as an uninviting a place for people who would like want to teach people to exist, like to work and things like that.
But we're a very young country. You have to keep that in mind. You know, we got independence in 1947.
Right.
And so for us, education is a privilege.
Right.
And simply a privilege because it was kept away from us for so long. You know, for 250 years, we weren't allowed to be educated by the British so that we wouldn't prosper. So right now, my God, your kid is going to school, your kid is going to college. That's the first privilege that you have.
Right.
That's the first sign of privilege, apart from meals on the table, et cetera, is education. You know?
Right.
So I don't even think we're at the point where we're like, what kind of narrative, et cetera, et cetera. Fuck, we're learning. This is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I think we're there.
It's been inverted, you know, here. Like, it's not. So many people are beginning to look at it with hostility, and the rhetoric, especially with like a lot of conservatives, is like this hostility towards academia, and that like that's where indoctrination happens or whatever. And they've made that a compelling talking point for their base to be able to look at that and not see that this is something that causes upward mobility or something that, you know, black and brown people see as a privilege too. That's why many people want to go to college, but again, the status quo is such that we're having to fight this whole campaign of like school choice, which is really just a way to say we need to destroy the public school system. And so like, yeah, we have like some people understand the value of education and that it is absolutely a privilege, or, you know, something worth just in like being able to teach our kids like the most basic things about like our history or math or reading. While others, like, you know, see it as a slippery slope into being woke,
right?
Or that they're like, I'm going to teach my kid at home or something like that, or I don't want my kids with other kids that are different than them. So it's just there's just so much chaos going on in like people's ability to even see something as education as like a right for everyone, and isn't something that needs to be turned into like a rhetorical barb.
And that's why you have a 20-minute debate. And it sorts everything out.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're good here.
Yeah.
Well, Veer, it's been such a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, see you, all that good stuff?
You can find me on veerdas.in. I don't have .com yet because some bastard bought it. And I defaulted on one payment when I was 28 years old. So it's veerdas.in. I'm going to be touring America throughout May and June. So you can find my cities there. And you can catch me on Netflix. The special is called Veer Das Landing. So check it out there.
Yeah,
nice. Is there a city that you haven't been to that you're particularly excited to see in the US?
I'm building a set right now. So I'm kind of doing, you know, smaller rooms. And so I'm going to like Brea, California, and Salt Lake City, and Houston, and a bunch of other places. You know, so it'll be fun.
Atlantic City, you've got coming up. I guess that was yesterday as of... that's May. May 13th, Atlantic City. An interesting experiment. And is there a tweet or work of media that you've been enjoying?
Good Lord. A tweet or a work of media that I've been enjoying. I just follow an account called The Dodo on Instagram. It's like dog rescue video stuff. And I like everything that they do. Like, I love a good dog rescue video. I'm the guy who will skip to the part where the dog is rescued. Like, I'll catch one glimpse of the dog when it's sad, not be able to watch the rest, and just skip ahead until the dog is happy and fluffy and healthy again.
But watch
the dodo.
There you go.
Yeah.
On Instagram. I love all this stuff.
I always get, for whatever reason, the ones that hit the hardest for me are the ones where you see, like, a sheep whose wool has become, like, just so matted.
And then they have to shave it, yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, this like this sheep was blind. They couldn't even see. And then you see them like working all the wool and stuff off and then like, oh, bless that sheep.
Yeah.
That's you.
Gets me all right. Miles, where can people find you? Is there a work media you've been enjoying?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. Find Jack and I on our basketball podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. Yeah, you know, we're talking about the NBA playoffs. And then you can find me on my other show, 420 Day Fiance, where I talk about just absolute trash reality shows, because that's the way I escape from reality, by going into that other reality. Is there a tweet I like? Let's see. I just want to keep the pressure. Just keep talking about Harlan Crowe and, you know, Thomas or Clarence Thomas. And I didn't realize we talked about how Harlan Crowe bought his mom's house. She still lives in that house that he bought and renovated. So
what's the big deal?
Yeah. So it's basically like, here's money and then you can live in it for free. Or I don't know. I don't know what their agreement is, but I'm surely that doesn't curry favor with the Supreme Court justice. At Will Stancil at WH Stancil tweeted, I feel like people are losing perspective. A billionaire subsidized millions in luxury travel for a Supreme Court justice, then bought the justice's parents' house and let them stay in it while he paid for it. Short of envelopes of money, how much more crooked could you get? Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see how long it takes.
Yeah. A tweet I've been enjoying is Josiah Johnson, King Josiah on Twitter. Fixed the NBA for me, fixed the draft for me. He said they should do, somebody said, what's one thing you'd change about the NBA playoffs? And he said they should do NBA way-offs and have the bottom four teams play for the number one pick same week as the play-in games. That would be incredible. That would be like so amazing. Yeah, that would be so dope. What a great idea. King Josiah. Make him the king of the NBA. Literally. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song do you think people might enjoy?
Just, you know, just some more beats, some head nod stuff for you, because I recommended a lot of beats last week. I'm going to keep that going. This one is from the artist 6-2, S-I-X-T-O-O, and it's called Box Cutter Emporium Part 3. And it's just got, it's got a really nice, like, electric piano sample and just good chopped up drums and a little droning bass line. So, yeah, enjoy it. Box Cutter Emporium Part 3 by 6-2.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for us this morning. Back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.